From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast that we began on our previous broadcast. Hank is talking with prominent author and social critic Oz Guinness. Let's now pick up Hank's conversation with Dr. Oz Guinness.
You know, you give one real big warning when you say that the debate about America's future is also a debate with respect to the future of the world. What kind of world our posterity will live in? Expand on that a bit.
Well, people don't realize how rare free societies are. If you condense the whole story of civilization into 1 hour, free societies only come in the last 5 minutes, and they're rare and they're fleeting. You know, it was the American experiment. Athens lasted as a democracy 50 years, no more. And America, 300 odd years, it's the longest running political tutorial in the art of freedom the world's ever seen. So if it fails, it would be a tragedy, but not only for Americans, it would be a tragedy for the world, because there's no one else doing it so well. And if Americans give up on all that it took to build the American Republic, it's a carelessness and an irresponsibility on the most colossal historic level. And that's why I, as a European, an Englishman, an Irish here, sometimes I just grieve with sorrow, and sometimes I just get mad internally. I'm outraged. You know, things are happening that are unrecognizable in the America. I remember coming here as a student at the time, and so on. And do Americans realize the stakes of what's happening now? That's my point.
I was just thinking about the fact that being in Washington, D.C., recently, you look at the monuments, the glistening buildings from Capitol Hill, and you think that the American experiment is going to go on forever. But if you've traveled around the world, I was in Greece not all that long ago at the Parthenon, you realize that civilizations rise and fall, and sometimes with incredible rapidity.
No, you're exactly right. Now, you do find among the framers the realism and that sense of history. You find it, say, with Abraham Lincoln, as I quoted in an earlier book. He was so aware of what he called the silent artillery of time, assaulting the walls of the Republic. But today, exactly the time when people need to think about it, Americans just think it'll be here forever, which is absolute folly, because nothing lasts forever in a fallen world. The presence of sin, the passing of time, and the best of things disappear. We know that from Scripture. And so the folly of Americans today, not considering how you sustain freedom when it's not being sustained, you know, it's just incredible. You go to Rome, and you can just stand and look. You can see a bit of the ruins of the king's Rome, then the Republic Rome, Cicero, Cato, and so on. And then you can see there, of course, the ruins of the Rome of the Caesars. But Rome lasted 800 years. And I think it was Gibbon who said he got the idea for his book on the decline and fall of the Roman Empire when he saw grass growing and cattle grazing where the emperors and the senators deliberated. And he realized the passing of time. And I look at Capitol Hill today, and there are very few people who have any sense of history or wisdom like that.
It would be good, perhaps, for everybody listening in to hear your contrast between freedoms, between negative freedom and positive freedom. All freedom is not alike.
Now, that's terribly important. And what the book is, as you know, Hank, it's a checklist of 10 questions for Americans to ask and see where they come out on some of these basic questions, whether they, without realizing it, are answering in terms of today's answers that come from the French Revolution rather than the American. But you're raising a question I raised. What do we mean by freedom? You know, Abraham Lincoln said in the 1850s, everyone's talking of freedom, but the North means one thing, the South means another. So we've got to say what we mean. And today there are different distinctions. The basic distinction is the one Lord Acton put on the table. Is freedom the power to do what you ought, or is it the permission to do what you like? Well, much American freedom is the second today, and that won't last. But you raised one of the deepest questions of all, which is the difference between negative freedom and positive freedom, which comes from Isaiah Berlin, the Jewish philosopher. Negative freedom is freedom from. No one's free under the control of anyone or anything outside themselves. You always have to begin with negative freedom. But that's only half of freedom. True freedom is negative freedom from, plus freedom to be, freedom for, positive freedom. And biblical freedom is the latter. It's both. So you look at the book of Exodus, liberation was not liberty. So getting out of Egypt is negative freedom. But as the rabbis say, it took the Lord one day to get Israel out of Egypt, but it took him more than 40 years to get Egypt out of Israel. And so liberty is a much wider, deeper, longer-term thing than just liberation. So you look at, say, the folly of evangelicals in the 1970s and 80s who were hung up on the born-again movement, which was liberation. It was wonderful, but it didn't lead to discipleship. And that's why so much of it proved very shallow. And so we need negative freedom, yes, but we also need positive freedom, which requires truth. And of course, in the postmodern era, that's not popular at all.
You talk about discipleship, and I think probably important to elaborate on that a little bit, maybe a lot, because in so many Christian homes and churches throughout the country, maybe I should say throughout the world, you have this sense of a transactional Christianity. I said a prayer, I have a card that gets me into heaven, a card that keeps me out of hell, and that's the extent of it. But the discipleship part of it is that you're born into a community of faith, and within that community, you receive the graces whereby you're transformed. So Christianity is never meant to be transactional. It's meant to be transformative.
No, absolutely. And that's one place where Nietzsche was absolutely right, not wrong, when he talked about a long obedience in the same direction. And of course, that's true not only of faith, it's true of freedom. We can't be free by ourselves. We can't be people of faith by ourselves. And you're rightly stressing the corporate, the collective, being a part of the Christian community, including the heritage of history down the centuries, and so on, the great community of the saints. So, you know, a great deal of the American church is incredibly weak today. I call it, this is the way I put it, there's a scandal of the American church. This is the one country in the West where Christians are a huge majority and yet have less cultural influence than tiny groups who are a fraction of the church's size. So wonderful groups that I love, like the Jewish people, less than 2% of America, or groups with whom I often differ, say the LGBTQ people. You know, they're less than 2% of America, and yet both of those groups have an influence on culture far beyond their size, whereas we, who are the majority in the country, have a very feeble influence on the culture, and there's something wrong with us.
Yeah, I think part of what's wrong with us is that we're separated. I mean, if you take, let's say, a pound of salt and you put it in a quart of water, that salt is going to make the water very, very salty. But the problem is that the salt is in individual little Ziploc bags, and as a result, it's not permeating the water at all. I mean, I think it's critical that, as Benjamin Franklin said, if we don't hang together, we're going to hang separately.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But we are the majority, and so I think if there's a revival and reformation and recovery of what the gospel really means, there truly is a chance to turn things around even now, although things are looking pretty serious. I argue this is the Rubicon years, in the sense, as you remember, Julius Caesar coming down from Gaul. If he crossed the Rubicon, which is the boundary with Rome in the north of Italy, he was declaring a war on the Republic. And he hesitated for a long time and eventually crossed, and then the Civil War began. And you can see today that a huge part of America, the universities and colleges, the press and media, and the world of entertainment, Hollywood and so on, they've already been overtaken by ideas that owe more to the French Revolution than to the American Revolution. Now, if that sweeps the whole country, which it hasn't yet, that would be the Rubicon moment that would spell the end of the American Republic, and that would be incredibly sad.
You mentioned Nietzsche. Expand on that a little bit. A lot of people listening in, believe it or not, are not going to know who we're talking about. And I think he's a very important figure because, as you just mentioned, all truth is God's truth. And he had some significant things to say in a positive direction. But he also, as I think you've pointed out, criticized the Exodus as the event that undermined the power-based view of freedom that he promoted.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Oz Guinness. The United States of America faces a world on fire and the possible end of Western civilization as we know it. Is America still prepared to shoulder its historic task on behalf of freedom, or is this a luxury we can no longer afford? Find out what Oz Guinness has to say in Last Call for Liberty, how America's genius for freedom has become its greatest threat. To receive a copy of Last Call for Liberty for yourself or as a terrific gift for a friend or loved one, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or go online at equip.org. Did you know that 23 of 25 major evangelical denominations are in decline? Or did you know that we're losing millions of evangelicals from the church in the United States? About 2.6 million per decade. And that what's left of a smaller, shrinking church is splintering over politics and a postmodern view of God and the Bible. Sadly, far too many Christians are simply oblivious in their bubbles, or too glued to their smartphones to notice the rising tide of spiritual and cultural decadence that threatens the church. Thankfully, others are receiving their wake-up calls and deciding to make a difference before it's too late. If you want to make a difference, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a year-end gift to support CRI's mind-changing and life-changing outreaches. Or visit equip.org. Equip.org.
Will the torch of freedom be handed to someone else or be extinguished altogether? These are the opening words to what may be one of the most important books of our time. If you care about American liberties and the future of our nation, Last Call for Liberty by Oz Guinness is an absolute must-read. Few issues are more fundamental than our most basic liberties, and those liberties are under attack like never before. The good news is that this dangerous direction need not be our destiny, but only if those concerned are willing to act in time. To receive your copy of Last Call for Liberty, How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat, visit equip.org and make a gift in support of the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, equip.org, or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI.
Take the Bible Answer Man broadcast wherever you go on your phone or handheld device with the Equip app, free from the Christian Research Institute. The Equip app is available for both Apple and Android devices, so you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live each day or listen to archived programs at your convenience. You can also subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, make a donation to CRI, and read well-researched, trustworthy articles that will help you defend the faith and grow in your walk with Christ. With the Equip app from the Christian Research Institute, you'll have the answers you need to questions about Christianity, cults, and issues of theological and apologetic concern right at your fingertips wherever you go. So go to equip.org/app and download the Equip app for your phone or tablet today. Again, that's equip.org/app. With the year winding down, the Christian Research Institute faces a major funding gap that must be closed by December 31st that directly impacts this broadcast. And it's only through your generous support that it can be fully closed. So please help us continue being there for the hundreds of thousands like you who benefit from the Christian Research Institute each month. This is the last week to give your gift to help close our final year-end funding gap. So call now, 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank and Dr. Guinness in their conversation.
You mentioned Nietzsche. He criticized the Exodus as the event that undermined the power-based view of freedom that he promoted.
Yes, he called the Exodus slave morality. In other words, he hated the idea that the herd, as he put it, was replacing the hero. And he wanted the Superman, the Uberman, to be the hero, not the herd. And so did the French Revolution, so did the Russian Revolution, so did the Chinese Revolution. They were all elitist in their different way. And so Nietzsche was explicitly against Exodus and the American Revolution because there's stress on ordinary people. I always read some of Nietzsche. He is the deadliest atheist that we take on. But at the same time, he was always honest. If God is dead, which he believed, then no one should fool themselves that things go on as they went on before. And he couldn't stand what he called the progressive windbags of odious optimism. People who said, God is dead, everything's the same. No, no, he said, if God is dead, you've unhinged the sun, and everything has changed. So I admire Nietzsche, although he's certainly our deadliest opponent philosophically.
You look at the social experiments that took place not all that long ago. Think of what happened under Lenin 100 or so years ago. You have an angry revolutionary who absolutely decimates Russian culture, particularly the church. And that's not all that long ago. Pol Pot, I was in Cambodia recently and saw the killing fields firsthand. Marx's triumph of the proletariat, which led to Stalin's terror in Ukraine and so forth. So give us a little history lesson, because we're talking about epic events here today, and most people don't have a perspective of what can happen. In fact, I was just looking at a documentary on the plane yesterday coming back from California. Very interesting, Architects of Denial. You have the Armenian genocide, and very, very few people even know about it. And Hitler told us one war later that whatever he did to the Poles wouldn't matter because people have amnesia. They don't even remember what happened to the Armenians. So he thought, well, we can get away with this very, very easily because people are historically illiterate.
That's right. And we've got no value for the individual. I think it was Stalin that said something like, the death of an individual is a tragedy. The death of a million people is a statistic. You know, you mentioned, or I did, in response to you, algorithms. Algorithms couldn't give any interest to anything individual. Or you take, say, modern notion of utilitarianism, the greatest good of the greatest number. There is no high place of the individual today coming from any philosophy, any ethic, and even the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is under assault today. But the way I put it, the 18th century, the Enlightenment, said, yes, God was dead, but we could do better. You know, evolution would replace creation. Human engineering would replace providence, and so on and so on. And the 20th century has just called all that into question. So World War I, World War II, the things you mentioned. Then in the 60s, you had the rise of so-called anti-humanism. In other words, the sort of Leonardo type of picture of humanity, they said, was a man, and a handsome man, and a European man, and they attacked it. And then you had post-humanism, those who tried to see humanity in the light of the whole of creation, not creation, but the whole of the earth, and above all, the animals. I read yesterday a Clemson professor who actually said in the New York Times, it might be a good thing if humans went extinct, because we're damaging the rest of the species. And then, of course, you've got the post-humanism, which is seeing humanity merging with technology. So the whole notion of humanity today, or human worth, is under very serious assault. And we're moving into the age of post-truth. You've talked a lot about that. And I think the new thing is post-rights. And that's equally significant. Post-truth, post-rights. So we're in a world where there's only two peoples who have a high view of human worth, Jews and Christians. And Rabbi Sacks says, you know, the Genesis declaration that humans are made in the image and likeness of God, that is the Magna Carta of humanity. I love that. And it's desperately needed today in this anti-humanism, post-humanism sort of world that we're now seeing come in. We are the champions of human dignity, and we better stand firm. And we need to know why.
I thought it was brilliant in your book to talk about the Pledge of Allegiance, the national anthem, and the NFL. You talked about it and Trump talked about it. But what is the significance of standing during the national anthem? A lot of people, they don't know that there's a very great significance to body postures.
Well, the anthem and the flag and the Pledge of Allegiance all refer to the founding documents of this country and, above all, the Declaration of Independence. So you have someone who is a great American like Martin Luther King or Lincoln earlier, and Martin Luther King argued the Declaration was a promissory note. It promised liberty and justice for all, but sadly it didn't cash it in. So the time had come to cash it in. So he respects the Declaration even as he tackles the evil. Whereas you look at the Black Lives Matter or the kneeling controversy, they're disrespecting the very standard that you're supposed to be appealing to. And the fact is that their impulses go back not to the American Revolution, but to a rather different revolution, postmodern, enlightenment, and so on. And so Trump just talks a bit about the military and so on. He never ties things in with the founding first principles. So my disappointment with him, and I defend him in a lot of cases, he talks of Make America Great Again, MAGA, but he never asks what made America great in the first place. And it wasn't the army, and it wasn't the economy. It was ideas, ideas and ideals to do with freedom and justice and equality and so on. So people should be standing with great respect to the anthem, to the flag, and to the Declaration in order to fight harder for liberty and justice for everyone.
So your point is that if you take a knee, you're actually standing up for something else, which is what happened during the French Revolution.
Well, that's right. And they had a completely different idea of everything. You know well, Hank, you know, they didn't believe in God, so they trundled in a prostitute and made her the Marianne, the revolutionary symbol, and put her in the Pantheon as the new center of worship instead of the Virgin Mary, and so on. So the revolution, the French Revolution, was a deliberate parody of so much of the Christian faith that had been there before. But we have to say with sadness that the Catholic Church in France was so oppressive and so corrupt, it needed a revolution. And I've often quoted the cry of Diderot and the French radicals, you know, we will never be free until we strangle the last king with the guts of the last priest. So church and state, throne and altar, were one. They were oppressive and in collusion. Revolutions were off both. So that was half understandable. But the American Revolution, where faith was disestablished, it was left to the voluntary dictates of conscience, never had that problem. And so Americans don't have any excuse for going that way. They should learn from the disasters of the French Revolution.
And we need to learn from the Exodus as well. You alluded to this earlier, but I think it's worth expanding on the fact that the freedom envisioned by the American Founding Fathers had its roots in the biblical Exodus.
You know, in the old days, people would say, where did American freedom come from? They would have said the ancient liberties of the English, Magna Carta and all that sort of stuff. But that went out, say, with the rejection of the WASPs in the 60s. And now we have a rejection of white privilege altogether. So if you ask most Americans, they'd probably say, where did freedom come from? Athens. But of course it didn't. Athenian democracy didn't last more than 50 years, and the framers were very wary of Athens. Historically, American freedom comes from Exodus, and above all, the notion of covenant, which over time, through the Reformation, became constitution. And that root system is so wonderful, you'd think pastors would revel in understanding it, but of course we've got to live it out today. We've got to ask, what was it about Exodus that was so important in the Reformation and then in shaping New England?
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with distinguished author and social critic Oz Guinness. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth, and receive as our thanks for your gift Oz Guinness's book, Last Call for Liberty, How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI, P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
Stock markets may soar, stores may be packed, and the entertainment industry may hum with headlines, but don't be deceived. Radical anti-democratic movements are being fomented and funded on both the left and the right. Americans are angry at other Americans, strenuously struggling for what both sides believe to be the soul of the republic. Our society's conflicts are rooted in two rival views of freedom, one embodied in 1776 and the ideals of the American Revolution, and the other in 1789 and the ideals of the French Revolution. Americans must choose which view of freedom to follow. Don't miss Oz Guinness's essential new book, Last Call for Liberty, How America's Genius for Freedom Has Become Its Greatest Threat. To receive your copy of Last Call for Liberty, call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org.